It's one of the biggest crime mysteries of the past century. How did Fred and Rose West become Britain's most prolific and sadistic serial killing couple?
They derive so much pleasure, sexual and otherwise, from the pain of others.
At their height, they murdered a girl every 3 months, claiming at least 12 victims. But how did the evil begin?
It was suggested that his mother told him when he was 12, you know, now you're 12, you're grown up, you've got to have sex with me.
There's evidence Rose also suffered sexual abuse as a child.
We have incest here. We have incest being repeated through the generations.
In their first in-depth interview, Fred's own family cast new light on the couple.
Well, I always thought she was possessed by the devil.
But was Rose's lack of morality caused by shock ECT therapy given to her mother when Rose was in her womb?
ECT at this time was still fairly brutal.
And did the head injuries Fred suffered as a teenager distort his personality?
His dad said he didn't seem to think that he was the same person.
With so many girls and young women disappearing, how did Fred and Rose get away with murder for so long?
The police never particularly joined up the dots. Social services never particularly joined up the dots.
This is the dramatic account of how Fred and Rose met and became killers. What was it in the backgrounds of Fred and Rose West that spawned them as killers? Much of Fred's childhood was spent in the West Country village of Much Markle.
He grew up in the countryside amidst the sort of the muck and beauty of the countryside, the mud and the flowers. It's a very, very beautiful place. And the local church is where the Wests have been baptized and married and buried for generations.
Fred's parents were Walter, a farm labourer, and Daisy, who'd been in domestic service.
The Wests were essentially the rural poor, so we're not talking about people who are well-educated. I don't think Fred's father could even read and write. And they live in a tied cottage on a farm.
When we were smaller, our water used to get pumped up from the farm, up into a big tank at the back of the houses. You went inside the toilet, but there was no bathroom. So we used to bath in front of the fire on a Sunday, you know.
But something obviously went very, very wrong behind closed doors. Something very odd starts to happening, something very dark and sexual and perverse.
Fred was born in 1941. He was followed by three brothers and three sisters.
Fred wasn't the first child. There was a child before Fred, Violet, who died in infancy. And then Fred came along, and Fred was Daisy's firstborn child that lived, and he was her favourite. Fred would paint an impression of his mum being a rather formidable character, who would shoot rats, for instance, and discipline the children.
She also defended her eldest in disputes. Years later, Rose would fit this role model.
Daisy provided Fred with a backdrop of powerful females that you must appease, but that may protect you and provide for you.
Fred's farmyard background also brought him into regular contact with blood and slaughter. He claimed it had to slit the throat of the family's pig, but his family say that was pure fantasy.
He never killed a pig in his life, because the bloke who was the pig killer used to work with Dad on the farm, and that was it. None of us touched any of that.
In his most serious allegations, Fred blamed his parents for his twisted attitude to sex.
Fred said in interviews with the police at various stages in his life, his dad had had sex with underage children, girls, and that Dad took the view that this was acceptable behaviour.
He also claimed his father had introduced him to bestiality.
He said his father had actually taught him to have sex with sheep. Also, it was suggested that his mother told him when he was 12, you know, now you're 12, you're grown up, you've got to have sex with me.
I suspect that there was a lot of shame in the family, and it's perfectly possible that those early experiences would have led Fred West to want to get his own back, to shame others in the way that he may have been shamed within this family.
But Doug West agreed to appear in this programme, partly to deny all allegations of abuse.
I can sit here and tell you that it's not true, because none of us was ever abused, anyway, by anybody. And I mean, as far as Mum and Fred and Dad and Annie, that's just fantasy by somebody.
Well, the allegation came from Fred himself. He said that.
Yeah, well, we all know what he fantasized he is, don't we? From earlier about the pig.
Rose, brought up 150 miles away at Northam in Devon, had 15 years of turbulent childhood before she met Fred. Gillian Job, then a child, lived next door.
Would you say theirs was a happy house?
No, definitely not. Never saw no laughter going on, no. No. They went to school, they were home and they were in. Occasionally you saw them in the garden, just sort of walking around, not playing. I don't know if they had any toys when then.
Rose's mother, called Daisy, like Fred's mother, had married a man called Bill Letts. Rose was the youngest daughter among seven siblings. From the start of his marriage, before Rose was born, Bill was a tyrant.
I know you are. I'll take you something to eat shortly, all right? Just get on with your jobs and do a good job.
Will you shut up?
He would run his finger along the ledges to see if there was dust and so forth, and he would always find something. Then he would smash the kitchen up, beat his wife, the children were beaten.
What are you doing up here?
He didn't tell his wife he'd been diagnosed as schizophrenic in childhood.
I said you stay in the kitchen till it's clean! Get downstairs!
He once threw one daughter downstairs and banged the head of another against a wall. When Daisy intervened, he threw boiling water over her.
How could you do that? How could you do that to us?
One day, their neighbour Jill took Rose's older sister Joyce down to the seafront.
We were always out here anyway, playing, riding horses, swimming in the sea. This is the road here we came. And you're looking back into the village there. And we came out and we brought Joyce with us. And when we went back home, she had the hiding of her life, poor girl. And she was hosepiped down in the backyard, lots of shouting and screaming. And I remember my mum saying to me, listen, you've caused this. Don't ever take her again. But which she didn't.
In 1953, Rose's mother, Daisy, entered a deep depression. She was 8 months pregnant with Rose, but this didn't prevent doctors from giving her brutal electroconvulsive therapy. Could Rose West's personality have been damaged before she was even born? In 1953, 15 years before Rose's fateful meeting with Fred, her mother, Daisy, was given ECT for depression. Daisy was 8 months pregnant with Rose.
ECT at this time was still fairly brutal.
Electrodes were clamped to Rose's mother's skull, and a current passed through her brain.
Rose was probably affected. The damage may have been mental, but the genetics from a cold, withdrawn, schizophrenic father and a mother who was depressed would probably outweigh the damage.
Rose was born on the 29th of November, 1953.
She was this absolutely beautiful child with these great big eyes and dark, glossy hair.
She was known as Dozy Rosie, and as a child would rock herself physically backwards and forwards as if she wasn't quite right in the head.
At school, she quickly fell behind and was teased.
She found it very, very hard to mix with her peer group, and she was held down a year. And she was kind of quite friendless and bullied at school.
Her father showed a surprise affection for his youngest daughter.
She has the singular quality in the family of not being knocked about by her dad. And this leads to suggestion that there was something sexual developing between father and daughter.
Many have suggested this lay at the root of what followed.
To abuse others, to control others, to hurt others, to see others in pain, is all she knew as a child, and that would be normalised.
Rose played in a world of her own, cutting up sheets to make clothes for dolls.
Children who've been severely traumatised repeatedly, to manage that experience, often dissociate.
Rose!
They go off into another place, a place of safety. So they often appear as though they're not quite there, and they're a bit dozy.
Rose was protected by her father, so she learned how to manipulate to get what she wanted. She knew she had to have an older man as a protector.
It would be another decade before Rose met Fred West, 12 years older than her and a willing protector. By 1956, Fred was 15 and had left school with the reading and writing age of a 7-year-old. He was working on a farm at Much Markle in Herefordshire. Nearby, at Ledbury, the market house was a magnet for teens. Fred had realised he could attract girls if he scrubbed up his appearance and came here often with his brother, John.
He thought he was Jack the Lad. No, he enjoyed his life.
First time I remember Fred was when he used to go to the dances.
Are you two doing today?
And I used to go too, and the girls were looking at him.
But Fred was already developing the crude approach with young women he'd adopt in future.
Hey, why don't you come over here for a bit?
It's not a kiss and a kind of chat up and let's go out, let's go to the pictures. It's grabbing a girl for sex. But he was also a coward. He wasn't a man who had confrontations with other men.
What's that? You touch him again, you're off him!
He wouldn't defend himself. John was just opposite. He'd be in and duff and then you'd know about it. But Fred never did. That's why you can never understand how he was like he is.
Fred loved motorbikes, and age 17, he bought one.
He did look after the bike. He cleaned it on a weekend, and he took a pride in his bike.
But one evening when he was riding home, a girl was cycling in the opposite direction. The girl had cut some bruises, but Fred came off far worse. These were the days before compulsory helmets. Fred's skull and many other bones were shattered. For 7 days, he lay unconscious in Hereford Hospital. Dr. Keith Ashcroft is an expert in the impact of brain damage on criminal behaviour.
If we consider a force acting on the front part of the head, then the energy would transmit through the brain, causing damage, because the brain is actually a jelly-like substance. And what would be interesting to note would be if there is any damage to the orbitofrontal cortex, which is involved in impulse control and emotional decision-making. This is one of the main areas of the brain implicated in psychopathy, giving rise to very serious offending behaviours, such as what happened with Fred West.
Many around Fred felt he changed after the accident.
His dad said, like, he didn't seem to think that he was the same person. Well, the same personality, then.
He now had a limp.
Long John Silver.
And there were the first signs of the aggression which would later lead to many murders with Rose. But she was still 9 years away. In 1960, aged 18, Fred met another girl, prepared to listen to the tall tales he now used as chat-up lines.
They could have buried me or anything, and I came back to life. No, I'm being serious, I came back to life.
Rena Costello, a 16-year-old from Coatbridge near Glasgow, came from a broken home and had been in court and sent to Borstal. She was now staying with relatives in England.
This is quite typical, actually, of the women who fall into Fred's orbit.
They were suited, actually, as a match, because they were both tearaways. They were all together, you couldn't separate them.
She has a low self-image, self-worth. She allows herself to be used by men, and this is all part of what is exciting to Fred.
But Fred grew jealous. They argued, and after a few weeks, she returned to Scotland. With Rena gone, Fred turned his attention to other girls. Almost immediately, it landed him in trouble.
He tried to put his hand up the girl's skirt, went up the fire escape, and she knocked him back down him.
He fell 10 feet onto concrete and was knocked unconscious. Once again, he was taken to hospital in Hereford with brain damage. In Devon, Bill Letts's mental condition had grown worse. Rumours of his sexual interest in young girls had led to hostility, so he moved his family to Bishop's Cleeve in Gloucestershire. Rose was now just 20 miles from Fred. She entered adolescence and became highly sexual.
She would be walking around the house naked or parading in front of her father.
Rose now reacted aggressively if bullied, earning a fearsome reputation. If her younger brothers were attacked, she'd protect them.
She began to unleash that pent-up aggression that over the years had probably been built into her by the comments and ridicule from others.
Now age 15 and just months from meeting Fred, Rose took a job which brought her into contact with older men serving at a roadside snack bar. She was frequently seen emerging from cabs after having sex with them.
She was looking for someone who was older, more in control, more powerful.
Police were called to investigate one older man who had sex with her, but no charges were brought. In the autumn of 1960, Fred West, in hospital with head injuries, regained consciousness after 24 hours. Those around him saw changes in both his appearance and behaviour.
He becomes even more sexually active, but sex was something to be taken from a person.
These changes echo the classic case used in neuroscience to show how a head injury can lead to increased aggression. Phineas Gage was a railway construction worker in the 19th century.
He was well-respected, very nice guy. An explosive blasted a 3 feet metal tamping iron through the left side of his cheek up out of the top of his head. He appeared conscious and recovered quite well. But in fact, his behaviour changed dramatically from a very presentable guy to one who's irascible, aggressive, lying, cheating. We assume that we have the control of our behaviour, but in fact, in some instances, our behaviour is completely biologically determined.
In the years after the accident, Fred showed clear signs of the perverted sexual behaviour that came later. In June 1961, age 19, it emerged not only had he been having sex with a 13-year-old girl, but she was pregnant.
The reason why he's interested in younger girls is partly because that's who he can seduce. People who would be his own age or superior to him would be repulsed by him.
The police were called.
It seems by his testimony at the time that he'd been raping this girl for several months.
His responses were revealing.
I've got a problem with it.
Well, I'm sorry, but I've got a problem with it.
I don't know why. I mean, everyone does it.
No, I'm sorry.
Daisy, his mother, was outraged by this. The family knew the girl in question, and Fred had to leave home.
But the trial at Herefordshire Assizes in November 1961 collapsed. The 13-year-old refused to give evidence, and Fred was released. There was no formal monitoring by the authorities. No sex offenders register.
Police knew that here was somebody who was a paedophile. You do get a sense in which a number of people in positions of authority had intervened and could have intervened further.
A short time after the court case, Rena Costello, Fred's former girlfriend, walked back into his life. It was 1962. She was now 2 years older, had dyed her hair blonde, and had been working as a prostitute in Glasgow.
Fred is excited by prostitution and repelled by it. He's excited by women who would do what he wants, but he's also kind of disgusted by them. So there's some misogyny going on, but also lust.
In Glasgow, Rena had broken up with an Asian bus driver after becoming pregnant with his child. She travelled to England, took a job as a waitress at Ledbury in Gloucestershire, and met up again with Fred Her unwanted pregnancy excited him.
Blake, what are you doing here?
Come to see you, aren't I?
I told you, don't come and see me at work.
He wanted to perform an abortion.
Look, you've got a little problem. Oh, you've got to let me sort it for you.
I don't know, is it safe?
This would have fitted into his sadistic sexual approach to females. They were objects for his pleasure, and his pleasure might not just include sex, but the invasion of their body with objects.
At the time, abortions were illegal. Fred took Rena to nearby woods and tried to abort the baby. But they were spotted, the police were called, and he had to stop. Rena decided to keep the child, and weeks later, in Ledbury, they married.
It's a quick ceremony. There's one photograph taken. And years later, when Rena went missing, this was the missing poster photograph. Where is Rena?
They moved to Rena's hometown, just outside Glasgow, where the baby was born. Fred was now married to a woman who'd had another man's daughter. She called her Charmaine. Fred immediately took against the baby.
What's the matter with her?
Rena returned to prostitution, with an instant impact on her sex life with Fred.
He would suddenly grab her and demand to have sex, and this sex is really essentially rape. And it would be very short, and he often couldn't perform sexually. As time went on, he found it harder and harder to get excited. Sex became fetishized, and one of the fetishes was that the women that he slept with were sleeping with other men.
But outwardly, they pretended everything was fine. Fred took Rena and Charmaine to see his family in Much Markle.
That was it. It was the family reunion. Because nobody had met her, not as his wife until then.
Fred dreamed up a number of stories to suggest he was leading a glamorous life in Scotland.
And there are all sorts of strange elements to this fictional life of Fred in Glasgow, one of which is that he's mixed up in organised crime, and one is that he's a pimp running prostitutes.
He boasted of the silk shirts he said he normally wore.
Not today, obviously. Thought that was a bit posh for Much Markle.
The truth was very different. Fred ran an ice cream van. He found it the perfect way to meet the young girls he remained obsessed with. But as we reveal for the first time, he was about to find out what happened to paedophiles in the violent slums of Glasgow. The Gorbals in Glasgow was notorious in the early 60s as a gang-controlled slum area. It was here Fred West had his ice cream round, bringing him into contact with many teenage girls. The Gorbals was home at the time to writer Colin McFarlane, who was then age 10 and remembers Fred clearly.
It was very, very rough at the time. So for a little Englishman to arrive there in an ice cream van, it was a completely incongruous thing to do.
Colin and his young mates were Fred's customers. One day, Colin witnessed Fred's temper.
Word had got round that he had a sort of fascination for girls of age 12 or so.
There you go, two singles.
Fred the perv. Fred the perv, mate.
All right! Any more of that, and I'll throttle you with this, all right?
All of a sudden, I just realised I was perhaps looking into the eyes of a potential murderer.
In 1964, Fred's wife, Rena, gave birth to their daughter, Anne-Marie. Fred doted on her, in sharp contrast to his treatment of his stepdaughter, Charmaine.
Fred wasn't at all nice to Charmaine.
No, you can't have an ice cream. You'll ruin your tea. Now get out of it!
And she was bullied and abused and locked up and knocked about and just treated like you wouldn't treat a dog from day one.
Rena knew Fred had been unfaithful and began an affair of her own with bus driver John McLaughlin. Fred found out.
What's going on here then, eh?
Fred, don't.
You.
Nothing. What?
Get out!
He punched Rena and slashed John McLaughlin with a knife.
Get out, my head!
After that, he stayed with Rena, but became increasingly controlling towards her and the girls. He took on a nanny named Isa McNeil, who was shocked to see how the girls were treated.
Charmaine is sleeping in a bunk bed at this stage, and Fred builds a slatted cage around it, so she's in a sort of a prison cell.
Through Isa, another girl entered Fred's life. Anna McFall was in her mid-teens and from a broken family, like so many of the girls who would later become a victim of the West's. Fred found her attractive, but before any relationship developed, his spell in Scotland came to an abrupt halt. In 1965, he ran over and killed a 4-year-old boy. No charges were brought, but local people were angry. And until now, it's been thought this is what drove Fred away from Scotland. But writer Colin McFarlane recalls local people were already angry with Fred over his fascination with young girls. Power on the streets of the Gorbals lay with the feared razor gangs.
If you had a complaint about a suspected paedophile, you could actually approach the gang members who would sort them out for you.
Colin remembers how one day, a senior gangster turned up where Fred had his ice cream round.
Yeah, seen that wee Fred about?
And I said, no, he hasn't been around for a couple of days. He says, well, we're looking for him.
You'll let us know, won't you?
The gangster promised young gang members that anyone who did Fred in would be rewarded. Minutes later, Fred appeared.
The guys saw him and that was a chance. They all ran towards the van. They had big knives and razors. Fred saw this, panicked and sped off.
Fred, Rena and the children fled south and in 1966 moved into a caravan not far from Much Markle. He was now just 12 miles from where Rose was growing up in Bishop's Cleeve. Fred took a job with macabre links to what followed.
Fred was used to the gruesome activities of a farmyard. He revelled in them. So his choice for working in an abattoir was not that strange. He would learn how to dispose of animals, their death, and the skillful ways you remove sinew from bone and release that bone from the rest of the carcass.
That actually is what Fred later did to human beings.
It was a fate which would befall 2 out of 3 women who approached the caravan one day that June. Fred's relationship with Rena was still rocky, and she'd been spending time away in Scotland. She came back with Isa, the former nanny, and Anna McFall, the 16-year-old he'd found attractive. They all moved in together.
Fred's existence in the caravan, with 6 people crammed in there, would have intensified his sense of territoriality.
Right, I'm off to work. You don't go wandering off, right?
It'll be fine.
Oh, not it'll be fine. You stay here, right?
He became increasingly violent, increasingly demanding towards Rena. He wanted to know what she was doing every second of the day.
At the same time, Fred and Anna became close. She'd long for him to come back from the abattoir, despite his often dark moods.
Tell me I don't see no dinner.
It's in the oven.
That's handy, isn't it? When I comes home starving...
He was increasingly ready to slap Rena.
I told you before!
Make her stay!
You shut up!
Rena and Isa secretly drew up a plan to escape. One day, when Fred was supposed to be at work, Rena's former lover John turned up with a mate to rescue them. But possibly tipped off by Anna, Fred surprised them.
What's going on here then, eh? Come on.
Oh, you again. Back for some more, are
you? Where's the problem with that?
You've had enough of going.
What's going on then, Renee?
Get it away from you, we've had enough. Come on, Pip. Come here.
You're not going anywhere with that.
Fred, although he's shown nothing but cruelty towards Charmaine. He wants to keep the kids. He's very possessive of his children throughout his life.
She's not staying here with you!
You show your face round here again, and I'll kill you!
Rena escaped, leaving Fred with the children, and Anna McFall. She became Fred's lover, but at 16, struggled to cope with his children. Fred, as happened often, put the children into care, then brought them home again. But social services didn't intervene.
The fact that he kept moving his children in and out of care
should have raised alarm bells. But on the other hand, there were reasons in terms of his own personal life and where he was living that probably objectively he couldn't have looked after them on his own. So in that sense, there's some sort of logic in it. It's the amount and the frequency that's the problem.
Later that summer, Rena returned to confront Fred and claim back her daughters.
Ah, you miss me.
Look, hole in the head.
Come on, give us your hand.
She took the girls, but also stole some of Anna's belongings and fled to Scotland when her thieving was discovered. A Gloucestershire policewoman was sent to Glasgow to bring Rena back. WPC Hazel Savage would later play a key role in bringing the West to justice.
Hazel is the one, more than perhaps anybody in the police, who, to some extent, uncovers the story.
I nicked Anna's stuff out of spite, really. She's supposed to be my friend. She's sleeping with Fred, anyway.
He doesn't seem like much of a husband.
No, you're right, he's not much of a husband. He's violent with me and the kids. He's depraved sexually, if you know what I mean. He's no normal in that way. I don't know. He's not right in the head, I think he's probably mad.
What do you mean?
But Hazel Savage never forgot her conversation with Rena. And 28 years later, she was the officer who insisted Fred's patio at 25 Cromwell Street in Gloucester was dug up. In November 1966, Rena was given 3 years probation for theft by Gloucester magistrates. She started spending time at the caravan when Anna wasn't there. Fred was now having to juggle two women, and he found it increasingly stressful, especially when Anna became pregnant and began talking about marriage.
Rena didn't know that Anna was pregnant with Fred's child, and Fred didn't want her to find out.
Fred's meeting with Rose was still 2 years away. For now, his loyalty was to his wife, Rena, and he didn't want to lose her.
Fred kind of realised at this point that his overstretching of himself to try and maintain all these relationships was not going to work. Therefore, Fred was brought to the brink of a decision.
In July 1967, Anna McFall went missing. No one reported the fact to police. Fred always denied he'd killed her, but he did later tell police he knew the field just outside Much Markle, where she was buried.
Fred West's killing career apparently began with Anna McFall.
When Anna's remains were at last found in 1994, they revealed many of the murderous techniques also found on the victims Fred killed with Rose. Anna was dismembered, using skills Fred had learned at the abattoir. Her fingers, toes, wrist and ankle bones had been kept as trophies.
That body was mutilated in many ways, and that was a body that was pregnant with his child.
The unborn baby's skeleton was found curled at the side of Anna's remains.
This callousness shows the absolute depth of Fred West's psychopathy.
Anna's letters home to Glasgow stopped arriving, but friends simply assumed she'd moved on. With Anna out of the way, Fred's relationship with Rena once more blossomed. They moved into a new caravan and for a time lived peacefully as a family. But the caravan was in Bishop's Cleeve, virtually on the doorstep of 15-year-old Rose Letts, who'd recently been having sex with any older man who took her fancy. One evening in 1969, she and 27-year-old Fred were at the same bus stop.
Fred and Rose, well, it was a disaster, wasn't it? Their meeting, really.
All right, my love. Where are you two then, eh?
Rose West was surprisingly pretty when she was in her teens. You know, we see pictures of Rose West even now in which she's overweight and frumpy and has large moon spectacles. But there was a young girl there once.
She finds him repellent. She very memorably describes that he had green, ganky teeth.
Even though she was repelled at first, it only took a bus journey and they were bonding. Paedophiles soon work each other out, and I think that they were coming from the same place.
Here is this young woman who was pretty friendless suddenly being chatted up by a man who was giving her attention.
This fateful meeting would result in at least 11 more deaths and meant one young girl had only 2 years left to live.
Stop screaming!
It was 1969 and 27-year-old Fred West had just met 15-year-old Rose Letts. He wooed her with extravagant gifts, possibly stolen, including a fur coat and lace dress.
You know what they say, don't you? Fur coat, no knickers.
His crudeness didn't put her off. She asked if he was married, but he said his wife was a prostitute in Glasgow and nothing but trouble.
In fact, Rena was still around. They just had a domestic row. They weren't together in the caravan. So this was a lie.
He knew that Rose liked children and invited her to the caravan.
Hey, girls, girls, put that down. I've got someone for you to meet.
The filthy caravan was in sharp contrast to the meticulously clean home of Rose's childhood.
This is Rosie. Well, say hello then.
Hello there, girls. What are your names then?
Rose became a regular visitor. Her father, who it's thought had been sexually abusing Rose from childhood, now feared he was losing her.
Look, it's fine. He said he's going to pay for me.
I'm sorry.
For looking after the kids. He's going to pay for me. There's nothing going on between me and him, all right?
No, I'm telling you, you stop this. No, you stop this right now!
But Rose continued to visit the caravan and soon became Fred's lover. He introduced her to his family.
He said that she was the new nanny, but she was too loud for my opinion. And we never hit it off from the start.
With Rose, Fred could sink deeper into sadomasochistic sex. He also introduced her to prostitution.
She's supposed to be here at 3.
When we've got a killer couple like Fred and Rose West, what we are dealing with is that French phrase, a folie à deux, literally a madness shared by two. And within every folie à deux, there's a dominant and a subservient partner. There almost seem to be no limits to Fred's sexual interests, and very quickly one sees Rose adopting that worldview.
Rose's father, Bill, soon found out about the prostitution.
He's absolutely furious and he's spitting nails and he wants this to stop.
Oh, God! You see him again and I'll disown you! Is that clear?
That's not fair!
You're mine. You're my little Rosie.
You're my girl.
Right. You stop seeing him. You get a proper job. And you can stay here. Otherwise, it's up to you.
And I choose Fred.
Soon, Rose was pregnant with Fred's child.
Rose saw the image of herself with Fred and some wonderful fantasy future in which she was both mother to his children and played the role of some kind of goddess in his life. Now, the reality of this was day-to-day, catering with and taking responsibility for children. It was going to be hard work.
Rena wasn't living in the caravan, and Rose was often left in charge of two girls, neither of whom was her child.
Girls, enough noise!
So how was she with the kiddies?
A bit abrupt. I mean, if she'd been my nanny, I'd have clobbered her.
Girls, enough! Enough! Shut up, both of you! Charmaine, I'm sick of this!
Charmaine was a very, very bright little girl and would challenge her, whereas Anne-Marie knew to keep the head down, and even so, you know, both were victims of awful violence from Rose.
In the spring of 1970, Rena reappeared at the caravan.
Hello, I'm Rena. I'm the kid's mum.
Hello.
Charmaine, you two get back, please.
Look at you.
She wanted her daughters back. She could have no idea this would be her last chance to save the life of one of them. The details of her conversation with 16-year-old Rose are unknown, but she didn't get her way.
For Rose, those children were objects of power. Those objects of power tied her to Fred, and that she would not let go of.
In June 1970, Fred and Rose rented a flat on Midland Road in Gloucester, and Rose gave birth to a daughter, Heather. Fred, under new financial pressure, resorted to theft. Late that year, at Gloucester Magistrates Court, he was jailed for 9 months.
This is an important development because it essentially means that Rose is left alone with the kids and she can't cope.
Do as I say!
And
we'll see about that, madam!
Rose was barely 17. The main target of her stress was Charmaine, as witnessed once by Charmaine's best friend.
Can you believe her? I bet you're not so naughty.
Charmaine would not show fear. She would not cry in front of Rose. This was a massive challenge.
It's almost like, I'm not going to show that I'm vulnerable, I'm not going to show that I don't feel good enough, bearing in mind that she'd been abandoned by her mother, or that's what she believed.
Years later, Anne-Marie would recall how Charmaine promised her Rena would one day rescue them. In March 1971, 8-year-old Charmaine was taken to Gloucestershire Royal Hospital with an ankle wound, possibly caused by a knife. It was a last missed opportunity to save her life.
The violence towards children was spiralling, particularly with Charmaine, who presented at A&E with Rose, and nothing came of that. There was no checks to find out what was going on.
Rose and Fred exchanged gushing love letters while he was in prison, but there were deeply menacing sections about Charmaine.
Darling, about Char, I think she likes to be handled rough. But darling, why do I have to be the one to do it? And I hate it.
In June 1971, days before Fred was due for release, Rose's temper pushed her beyond the brink. Rose has never said what happened that day or how she murdered Charmaine. But when Anne-Marie returned from school, Charmaine wasn't there.
Anne-Marie comes home and Rose tells the lie, which she would tell for the rest of her life.
She's not here.
Where is she?
Your mum turned up. She's gone to live with her. That's what Charmaine wanted, isn't it?
Rose didn't want Charmaine to survive because as long as Charmaine lived, that was an excuse for a woman that Fred had had a relationship with to continue to be in Fred's life.
Fred was the only person told the truth. There's no evidence he was angry with Rose. It was probably at this point he told her he'd killed Anna McFall.
Fred has killed, and so has Rose. And therefore they have this joint enterprise from that moment on together that they are both killers. They're both locked in a deadly embrace.
Next week,
Rose had grabbed my legs and held them apart, and he was beating me between the legs.
The dramatic stories of the women that got away from Fred and Rose and the ruthlessly efficient system which ensured many others did not, when they were drawn into the clutches of Britain's most prolific serial killing couple.